Hi there, I'm Dave McLeod, and this podcast about walks in Glennevis was made by the Nevis Partnership. The Nevis Partnership is one of the charities that look after the area around both Ben Nevis and Glennevis. This podcast series has been made to help you enjoy some of the brilliant low-level walks in Glennevis, and it's based on a booklet published by the Nevis Partnership, which you can pick up from the Glennevis Visitor Centre or order from friendsofnevis.co.uk. For this walk in particular, it's really useful to have the booklet, as there's quite a few paths through the forest around Cow Hill, and the map and detailed description helps a lot to find your way around. This is the last episode in the series, and to finish off, I'll be walking the circuit of Cow Hill, which lies at the mouth of Glennevis. Despite its proximity to the town of Fort William, it's a surprisingly lovely walk with really interesting views that take in both the landscape of the Great Glen and the Glenny, but Glennevis too. The Cow Hill circuit epitomises for me one of the reasons I got into exploring the Scottish Hills as a youngster growing up on the edge of Glasgow. As soon as you leave the rim of Fort William and follow the Peat Track across Cow Hill, you immediately feel the surroundings becoming remote, with very little evidence of man. The circuit is also a great place to look down over Fort William and get a sense of its rather chaotic history. If you're only visiting Fort William briefly and don't have a car to travel around, it's a great way to see a lot of the local scenery that you can access directly from the train station in Fort William. The normal start to the circuit is from the car park at the Glennevis Visitor Centre, but it's also possible to pick up the trail from a path behind Fort William Leisure Centre, which leads up through the woods onto the Cow Hill circuit. After leaving the Visitor Centre, we walk back down the Glen a short way, turning up into the forest tracks past the Braveheart car park and around the steep flanks of Cow Hill. As you round the bend, you'll arrive at a viewpoint with a great vista across Fort William itself. Underneath the viewpoint is a Saltire memorial which is clearly visible from the town. This is a memorial to the siege of Fort William by Clan Cameron of Glennevis, who used this site to mount their guns in the final throes of the Jacobite Rebellion in 1746. The Camerons fired their cannons on the English garrison of Fort William for 11 days until men were sent out from the garrison, capturing the Jacobite guns, and the siege was finally abandoned. Shortly afterwards, the disastrous final battle at Culloden took place that marked the end of Scottish independence until today, and the Cameron community in the Glen was diminished in a horrendously violent manner by the victorious English troops. The Gaelic name of Fort William and Garriston literally means the fort, and that's how the locals refer to it today. Although the fort was well served by ships delivering food and linking to Oban and Glasgow, the town was very poorly connected to the rest of Britain before the West Highland Railway reached the town in 1894. Before then, horse-drawn coaches travelled south via a rough track through Glencoe to the south, or across to the Aberdeen to Inverness Railway at Kingussie in Speyside. It took 3 weeks to reach London by coach. Coaches also took passengers west along what's now the road to the Isles to Arisaig. The coach would stop at Lochilert for the night, and the passengers had the choice of waiting until the morning or walking the remaining 9 miles. Winters were of course much colder in this era, and the Kingussie sleigh coach would often be abandoned for weeks stuck in the snow. Curling was a popular activity, practiced regularly for several weeks in the winter at the curling ponds just inside the entrance to Glennevis. The ponds have just been redeveloped by the Nevis Partnership. At the entrance to the Glen, the narrow dirt road had a toll stop with 2 large stones on either side and a chain running between them. The fee scale for use of the Glennevis Road was based on whether a man travelled on foot or on horseback. When the path up Ben Nevis was first built by a local man, there was initially a fee for use of this too. Hughie and Izzy Cameron have lived in Glennevis all their lives, at first near the youth hostel and since 1970 at the entrance to the Glen, just below the walk around Cow Hill. They've seen the Glen change a lot in that time.
We've been 41 years here in this house. I myself was born in the Glen, just at Old Nevis Bridge. My father was the grieve, looking after the farm, working the place, looking after the sheep, which at that time was quite a community up there. The Carbon site, there was part of that was a Forestry Commission nursery. The other fields were worked with potatoes, there was corn, hay, they were all cropped. The potatoes and that, they were shared with the community. Everybody mucked in.
Yeah,
it was quite. It was happy. They all mucked in. The forestry, the forestry workers helped. Came in, they came in and helped too. Mm-hmm. Some of them had crofts as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if a stag happened to appear hanging somewhere, everybody was there.
Well, it was a narrow road to begin with, and there was enough ground on the other side of the road that there were little fields along the other side. So I can remember potatoes being grown there and cattle. And well, we can remember families in the Creagh cottage.
In the Creagh cottage, you remember?
We knew the families there. The cottage over at Caldhu was used by the Navy.
Navy.
Beyond that, it was a. It wasn't a tarred road.
Not then, no.
It's not at that time. Well, it wasn't wooded the way it is now because there would be animals on it. But you always went to look for the first spring flowers, and you always knew where the bluebells or the primroses in particular would be. And you just knew the wee things that were going on there. And it was exciting to go and find the first primrose or the marsh marigolds along at near the visitor centre. And of course, curling was a great thing. They had a couple of little huts there with wood-burning stoves, and the curlers would be in and out there
for central heating
for their wee tram, I suppose. And
it was floodlit.
It was floodlit, and that's going back to the 1950s. Yeah, it was, but it was great fun to go and watch them. If people ask us about the Glen, we just say it's well worth it. The further you go, the better it gets, and that's the truth, really. The further you go, the better it gets, right to the very end of the road and beyond.
Fort William area in Victorian times was of course mainly sustained by agriculture. Cowhill takes its name from the common use to graze the cows that were kept by local crofters. Crofters grew their vegetables and oats and kept animals that were driven across the hills to larger markets in central Scotland, or even to England. A large cattle market was situated in what is now Claggan Village. Local cattle, as well as cattle driven from as far as Skye, were sold here and then driven on south. The main industries before 1929 were distilling, fishing and weaving. But the arrival of the British Aluminium Company changed that dramatically. Looking to the north edge of the town, on the lower slopes of Ben Nevis, you'll be able to see the huge surge pipes leading steeply down the hillside to Fort William's aluminium smelting factory. The factory is run by Rio Tinto Alcan, and it's been one of the town's major employers since it was first established in the 1920s. The short run of pipes leading to lines of turbines in the powerhouse below are all that we can see of an amazing piece of engineering. Aluminium production requires large amounts of low voltage electric current. Hydropower is the ideal solution to supply this, and Le Cabre's abundance of rainfall and big mountains made it the obvious place for this kind of development. All the same, the volume of water required to power aluminium production on this scale is huge, and it required a remarkable development underneath Ben Nevis and its surrounding hills. The supply of water to the top of the factory's surge pipes comes through a 15-mile long tunnel running under Ben Nevis and the mountains beyond it to Lough Treig and Lough Lagan to the east. The full catchment area feeding these lochs takes in a huge area of the Central Highlands, running across the Highland watershed to capture floodwaters from the River Spey by means of a network of dams and pipes. The main tunnel from Lough Treig was a massive engineering project even by today's standards, and it took 2,000 men 3 years to complete. The work was arduous and highly dangerous, with injuries and death happening all the time in the tunnel. But the success of the project was a huge boost for Le Cabre, which had lost a significant proportion of its population to emigration. It also meant that large-scale aluminium production was underway in time for the Second World War. Today the smelter produces 43,000 tonnes of aluminium every year, and it's also a major landowner in the area, owning large sections of Glen Nevis, managing the forestry and farming that also helped to sustain this area. As you traverse the hillside and start to pick up views down Lough Linnhe, you'll become aware of the uniform arrangement of the Great Glen running north past Lough Ness to Inverness. Most of the Highland Glens take a more varied and curving formation, whereas the Great Glen is striking for being so large and so straight. This is because it was not solely created from glaciation, but takes the line of an ancient geological fault, which still gives off the occasional minor tremor to this day. Local geologist and mountaineer Noel Williams explains why the geology of the Great Glen is still argued over by the experts.
Well, at about the same time that the caldera was being formed on Ben Nevis, the Great Glen Fault was active. And it was a major feature, very similar to the San Andreas Fault in Western America at the present day, where a huge slice of the country was sliding sideways relative to the rest. And in fact, if you look at a map of Scotland, everywhere north and west of the Great Glen was sliding down to the southwest, if you can picture that. So it was sliding a long way relative to the rest of the country. There's a lot of argument about exactly how far movement has taken place on that fault, but it's probably many tens of kilometres and quite possibly hundreds of kilometres that the rest of Scotland has moved relative to everywhere south of the Great Glen. So it was a major feature when it was active. And every time the fault moved, there would have been a significant earthquake associated with each little judder of the fault. And although the final displacement may well have been, hundreds of kilometres, it would have taken place by countless series of tiny earthquakes where it might move a metre or so at a time. But the key thing about the Great Glen is that this huge movement sideways caused the rocks along the line of the fault to be crushed. And because they were broken by this movement, they were more easily eroded. And of course, over time, that's led to the creation of the trench that we call the Great Glen.
If you're really lucky, you might see sea eagles catching fish on Loch Linnhe. The eagles have recently started to nest again on the remote far side of the loch. Before too long, the path starts to bear left, back over the flanks of Cow Hill towards Glen Nevis. The path cuts through open moorland above the highest parts of Fort William, and it's known as the peat track as it was used by locals to cut and carry peat back to their crofts for the winter months. The path from here descends steeply through the woods back to the River Nevis and the visitor centre. Given that Glen Nevis has lots of varied habitats of moor and woodland, there is plenty of wildlife to spot on the way around, as John Muir Trust ranger Alison Austin explains.
As you're walking up the riverside from the visitor centre, otters have been spotted at the side of the river there, and quite often the staff see them out of the window early morning. I haven't seen one myself. Most of the time when you're walking up beside the glen, it's really going to be bird life that you're going to be hearing. It's quite hard to spot sometimes. And it's some of the common species, robins and blue tits and great tits. And you might even spot a tree creeper spiralling up a tree trunk somewhere. Up above you, you may see buzzards or hear ravens croaking. As you continue, it is possible you might see a red squirrel coming out, but they're mostly in the plantation woodland. So if you're walking back down to the plantation woodland, you may see a red squirrel, or you might see some chewed cones on the floor, which shows you that they've been there. They're a bit secretive, so you're unlikely to see them. Again, you'll hear quite a lot of different bird song. Willow warblers are very common. They have a beautiful little trilling voice. Wrens and robins. And look up, it is possible you'd see golden eagles circling overhead. I have seen golden eagles there on a number of occasions. I don't think they nest in Glen Nevis, but it's certainly part of their territory. The river is very healthy for salmon coming up through it, and there's quite a lot of salmon reds, which are the nests where salmon lay their eggs outside the visitor centre, those gravel beds. So it's quite important to make sure they're not disturbed when the eggs are in the gravel. And we often run river dipping events with children, and we'll catch lots of the small insects and the invertebrates, the mayflies and the stoneflies, which the salmon feed on in the river. However, you only find them in the lower part of the glen because they can't get up past the waterfall at the lower falls. It's too much for them to jump. There are definitely pine martens around in Glen Nevis. They're much more prevalent these days than they have been in the past. I've never seen one. I've seen them outside my house, but not in Glen Nevis. But we know they're there. I've seen their droppings.
It sounds like Alison hasn't seen the pine marten, as it's onto a good thing down at Hughie and Izzy's house.
The pine marten is, we think, in the log pile at the river.
We've got a log pile at the back. We think he's living in there.
And so we have to feed him jammy bread every night.
Just so we can get pictures of him. We've tried to get pictures of him, but not.
He's very elusive.
This walk is often one of the first that visitors to Glen Nevis make, since it's so accessible from the visitor centre and Braveheart car parks, and follows a well-constructed path. If you enjoyed this walk, it's well worth making the effort to follow the other walks further up Glen Nevis that I've described in previous episodes, which take you through some really varied and stunningly beautiful mountainous terrain, without too much effort. I hope you've enjoyed the series, and once again, if you're inspired to come and experience the walks for yourself, all the information you need and maps of the walks are in the booklet Glen Nevis Walks, produced by the Nevis Partnership, and you'll find that in the Glen Nevis Visitor Centre or from the website friendsofnevis.co.uk. While you're on the website, please do make a donation to the charity to help them with their work in protecting Ben Nevis and Glen Nevis, such as building paths, removing litter and protecting the local wildlife. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and I'll see you in the Glen. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can download the other episodes from friendsofnevis.co.uk or from iTunes. Those of you with Android smartphones can also download the Glen Nevis app from the Android Marketplace, which has maps and lots of other details about Glen Nevis.